It's Tuesday, and everybody back in their regular time slot. So Vince Ferrara joins us for Vince's Views, and his weekly appearance is brought to you by our friends at Waters Equipment. Vince, how are you?
I am good, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Doing quite well, and plenty to discuss, as there was the national championship game last night, and it was interesting to see what you highlighted in regards to your reaction to the game. And what do you think the impact is on college football that it is Georgia that breaks through and wins its first national championship in more than 40 years, as well as the importance for the conference that it's somebody besides Alabama that sits atop the sport?
Well, I do think it makes it more difficult that it is somebody else in this league. You know, for a long time, there was a narrative that, oh, the SEC is just Alabama and everybody else. SEC's not great. It's just the Alabama. Alabama's carrying everybody. Well, now, 2 years ago, you had LSU. Now you have Georgia breaking through, starting to branch out a little bit. And then the fact, as far as Tennessee, the fact that it branches out to the SEC East, I do think it makes it more difficult. Now, does that mean that Tennessee can never catch Georgia? Well, they got a long way to go because of what's already been established for the years since Kirby Smart got there. And they were good before that, but they have gone to a new level in terms of recruiting and stocking that roster. Now you're talking about them being able to sell that national championship. Now you don't have the talk of, well, Kirby Smart can't win the big one. You know, we're over this. I mean, people complain about Nick Saban. They can complain about Kirby Smart if he hadn't broken through. So now that stuff is over with. And I just think, you know, even though Tennessee is and everybody else, there's a gap between Georgia and Alabama and everybody else. I still think it's an extra challenge to have to deal with in the recruiting ranks. But and other college football, more so for everybody else, it's more of an ego thing because it's more scoreboard for the Southeastern Conference for people to have to deal with. And, you know, they can complain that, you know, the SEC does this and non-conference scheduling. Saw Tim Brando complaining about the SEC's non-conference scheduling last night and it was almost like trying to take away from the SEC actually having both teams there.
Yeah.
And deservedly so. And then winning another title. I don't understand all that stuff, but it's harder for them to come up with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Gosh. Georgia opened with Clemson. Alabama tries to open the season or very early on play a team that it feels is part of a marquee matchup, normally in a one-shot game, not a home-and-home, but usually at a big venue. So yeah. While there are some SEC schools that it would be more than fair to talk about their scheduling, or a non-conference scheduling or lack thereof, I don't think the two teams that played last night fit that question.
I agree. And remember when Georgia was blown out by Alabama in the SEC championship game, there were some people that were insinuating that Georgia, because of their, they didn't, quote, beat anybody, that maybe them as a one-loss team maybe didn't deserve to be in the playoff, which,
right,
of course, was silly at the time. It looks even sillier now.
Well, yeah, the result for Michigan, the result against Michigan, I think, should have quelled all of that because
right,
they just wiped them off the field.
Right.
Georgia beat Michigan worse than Alabama beat Cincinnati.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, too. So every year South Carolina plays Clemson. Of course, Clemson's not any good. That's a nothing game. Kentucky plays Louisville, which is typically pretty decent. Georgia Tech's been off and on. Georgia plays them every year. Florida plays Florida State. There's some pretty good non-conference games that get played. Yeah, there are some patsies. And I'm a little bit – I don't understand this. It's only Alabama. The last 16 years, five different SEC teams have won a national championship. That's spread out pretty good, you would think. Anyway, having said all that, what did you think of Georgia's fourth quarter domination over Alabama? Alabama ran about 30 more plays than Georgia in that game, but Georgia just took over in the last 15 minutes.
It had to change for them to win, and it did, especially offensively. And look, that fumble, there's a lot of people that are probably thinking that's the break Alabama needed. They're going to win. Whether it's the refs or breaks or whatever, somebody's going to win it for Alabama because we all know they can't handle it on their own, right? Kidding, of course. So that looked like potentially a catastrophic play for Georgia. But afterwards, you're like, all right, Georgia, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. What do they do? Todd Monken threw it. He had confidence in Stetson Bennett. And Stetson Bennett had the motivation. Maybe that was the wake-up call he needed. He honestly looked pretty shaky in that game for a lot of times, especially early. So I'm not ready to label him having this. I know some people said, oh, yeah, great game. I think he finished strong, and he was clutch when he needed it. And Georgia had confidence in him when they came out throwing on that drive where they got the long touchdown. That's what they needed. They had confidence in Stetson Bennett to elevate his play, and he did. And that speaks so much. Obviously, his story is great, but considering how bad the start was for him and what had just happened on the field, for him to shake that off against that level of defense was incredible. And they needed all that to come together. And then the key, I thought, throughout the entire game was they were able to get pressure on Bryce Young that they weren't able to do in their first meeting. Alabama's offensive line had its best game of the year by far in that SEC title game. Georgia could not get home to the quarterback, and Alabama obviously had all those passing yards. Well, Alabama wasn't able to throw down the field successfully. They already had lost Mechie, and then they lost Williams. And now you couldn't take advantage of where Georgia is the most suspect in the back end of the secondary. So you can't throw down the field. Georgia's able, they made adjustments and were able to get to Bryce Young. It's a bad combination. And then the young receivers couldn't make the plays they needed. So really impressive, but the defense set the table for them to be able to have that one drive for Stetson Bennett and that offense to get it going. And then obviously with that pick six, that sealed it at the end.
Stetson Bennett, the first guy that was a walk-on quarterback to beat Nick Saban since Brian Griese in 1997, that started his career as a walk-on. Want to hop to this. Wyoming wide receiver, who was rated the number four wide receiver in the transfer portal by 247. He picks Tennessee, 44 catches, averaged about 20 yards a catch, 12 touchdowns. How big of a pickup do you think that is for Tennessee?
I think it's a very big pickup, Nair. And look, a lot of people wanted him. That should tell you a lot right there. He had visits scheduled at USC and Tennessee. And I was asked about him. Do you think Tennessee's going to get him? You know, a week or so ago, I'm like, well, probably need to wait till he gets here. Apparently not. Cody Burns, Josh Heupel, they sold him enough on what's going on here and his opportunity. And we had talked about it with Brent Hubbs, and I totally agreed with him when he said it. Tennessee had more of a need for outside receivers moving forward than maybe some of those slot guys. And he's another guy, big body, that can run. I mean, he says he can run 4.3-ish in that area, sub 4.4. So now you have another outside big body to deal with that was productive for Wyoming that a lot of people wanted and fills a need. I think that's a really nice get for Tennessee. And to do it without him even getting here, I think speaks well to this coaching staff being able to sell what they can do on offense. Obviously, they're going to have to prove that they can get some difference makers on defense, not only in the transfer portal, but in the recruiting classes moving forward. So that's still a little bit of a question mark and an unknown and to be determined. But I think they can sell what they're doing on offense and how exciting it could be. So I think with need, how many other people wanted him, speed and size, all those things, I think that was an outstanding get that speaks well to this coaching staff.
Let's get a call from Mark. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Mark.
Hello. I wanted to get your opinion of next week. The NFL playoffs will be on a Monday with the Cardinals playing the Rams, and I think it's an unfair advantage for the team that wins that game, and then they may have a short week coming back if they win next Monday. So I wanted to get your thoughts of one of the playoff games being on a Monday.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think it is a disadvantage for whichever team emerges from that third matchup between the two teams. Vince, it's been one thing to see them, and rightly so, include the partnership that goes with the Monday Night Football crew. I mean, we saw it this past weekend in Week 18 because they handled the Saturday games. Mm. So I don't think there's any reason that there's absolutely no reason not to include them in coverage, but I think this is ridiculous. They have made a point for years that you didn't have Thursday games in Week 18 or the final week of the regular season, and you didn't have Monday games because it creates a disadvantage. Now for them to do it in the playoffs, I'm really surprised. I mean, obviously, TV is dictating this, but I do think this is really giving the short end of a stick to whichever team wins between the Rams and Cardinals.
I agree, because they're definitely going to have at least one day short. Now, it will get really ridiculous if they stick one of these teams on Saturday. I can't see
right.
a scenario for them to do that. But TV dictates it. So it's the NFL, so we can't put it past them. Here's the only thing that could soften the blow a little bit is because you have games on Saturdays and Sundays, when teams advance, sometimes when you play, say, on a Sunday, maybe one team played the previous Saturday, another team played the previous Sunday. Well, the team that played on Saturday has that built-in extra day of rest. So that happens sometimes. So they, whoever they get matched up with, it better not be someone that played on Saturday. Because
mm-hmm.
then that's two extra days
right.
versus the winner of that game having played on a Monday. We'll see how much they pay attention to it. They better, considering TV is determining this Monday night game and it being unfair. But I'm not a fan of it either. There's no reason why you can't have three Saturday games, three Sunday games.
Well, TV's not going to determine whether the Rams or Cardinals play on Saturday, right? The NFL would determine that. TV just says you'll play Saturday, Sunday, right. but the NFL will decide when that team plays, right?
Right. But I'm okay. sure for primetime purposes, who plays in what time slot, they're doing it for TV. So, yes, the NFL is calling the shot on there, but if they know a marquee team, Dallas Cowboys, fill in the blank, they want them in a certain time slot, they're going to give it to them in a certain time slot. So that's where, indirectly, yes, TV, I think, will influence that.
What do you
think? Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair either. But I guess, just to be clear, TV's not telling, let's say the Rams win, they're not telling the Rams, you got to play Saturday. They're
correct.
Not doing that.
Correct.
The NFL is.
Yeah.
So that's – but I do think having that one extra day, it just doesn't make sense. And is this not the first time they've done this in the playoffs?
It
I
is.
Don't remember this.
Right. No, they haven't.
So –
because they have done so much to make sure that they didn't do this. So no Thursday games, no Monday games in the last week of the regular season.
And that's fair.
And they changed it just a little bit this past week, because last year and what it was for years before is all of the games in week 17 were on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
But then they moved up a couple, just a couple, not two tree.
Right.
they had a couple on Saturday, which was also a break from tradition. But that, okay, yeah, that's not the biggest deal in the world, but still it is a difference. And now I think this is a significant disadvantage.
Well, another thing that's weird about this TV layout, four different primary networks for their six games. You've got CBS, Fox, NBC, and ESPN among the six games. NBC has two games. CBS has two games. And how about San Francisco at Dallas as a playoff game on CBS?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of weird.
Yes, it is.
I guess the catch is going to come up. Maybe a couple, two, three times in that game, too. Just saying.
That's right. Vince's Views this hour, his weekly visit, brought to you by Waters Equipment. And as we were talking about it, it really was a wild, wild ride to get across the finish line for the regular season in the National Football League. But what was it like to see so many? I mean, granted, Tennessee didn't have quite the representation it once had in the league to these days, but still, you had so many impactful performances, whether it was Cam Sutton with an interception in the end zone for the Pittsburgh Steelers against Baltimore, or what about Juwan Jennings? Goodness gracious.
Man, career day, six catches, 94 yards, two touchdowns, and he was close to 300 total yards receiving on the season. I think it was 26 catches, something like that, five touchdowns. Man, he looked like he belonged. He's had spot opportunities here and there because they've had injuries at wide receiver. But, man, he looked the part and so clutch. Both of his touchdown catches in that game tied it for the 49ers, so obviously eventually won that game with the Rams. Manuel Mosley had mm-hmm. a big pick of Matthew Stafford as well. So, a lot of guys had – Josh Palmer had a touchdown catch when the Chargers were in that incredible final game of the season. It was so compelling. Alvin Kamara had a nice rushing day for Jimmy Saints. So really good performances. And even he doesn't show up on stat sheets, but Jakob Johnson continues to just destroy people at the line of scrimmage, goal line. He's having a really nice season in the last few as Patriots fullback. And so there'll be some really nice representation in the playoffs for those VFLs.
Yeah, Johnson has really carved a niche out for himself with the Patriots. And you can just tell it's a player that Bill Belichick really loves having on the field.
Yeah, and he was coachable, willing to do whatever it needed. I guess he initially tried to play him at tight end and then really maybe morphed more into that fullback role, and he has absolutely flourished in it, and they use the fullback a fair amount, and why not if he's so effective?
And we also have the coaching carousel, which has started to spin in the National Football League. And what's your reaction to the fact that at least one team, and it won't be surprise me to see more, jump in line, but the Denver Broncos have requested some time from inside linebackers coach for the New England Patriots, Jerod Mayo, as a potential candidate?
Yeah, I heard you mention that the other day, and ESPN had it on its bottom line scroll as well. And why not when that guy was called on the field, Belichick Jr.? So if you can get that kind of mind and he's thinking like Belichick and he's had the experience of being on his staff, why not? I mean, he was been successful at every level. And now that you have an opportunity there, why not? I would like to see it go to somebody a little bit different versus retreads. Now, Brian Flores might be a little bit different because he did have some success with the Dolphins, just not up to their standards. But it's an intriguing name that's definitely different. And I imagine, though, the Broncos are going to bring in a fair share of guys before they make a decision.
At least seven right now. Okay. That's how many they've requested.
I didn't realize the number was that big. So, that doesn't surprise me.
And there could be, I think, an eighth. And my guess is it's probably going to be about 10 guys as George Payton looks to fill that spot.
Obviously the VFL thing would be something that you would like, but is there someone that you have your sight set on that maybe you hope most the Broncos would hire?
Gosh.
Joe Judge.
Yeah.
He's a hell of a coach here with the Giants.
Oh my gosh.
I'll say this. I'll be surprised if the Broncos don't talk to Flores. I was really surprised the Dolphins let him go, because even though this year started disastrously with you open with a win over New England and you lose the next seven, but then lo and behold, you have a winning record at one point. You're in the playoff field. You don't finish, and you finish with a win. Mm-hmm. So he swept the Patriots this year. Jimmy was a bit surprised that the Dolphins pulled the plug, and a lot of people seem to think it's either that he wanted to push Tua to the side to bring in Deshaun Watson, or he had no interest in coaching Deshaun Watson. It seems to be one or the other, and you would think that there would be enough evidence that you could say for sure that he either wanted Tua to be his quarterback of the future or he wanted to go in a different direction. But it just, for so many, speculation is that he was on the wrong side compared to what the owner wants to see his franchise do.
Well, and the other word was that Flores was having trouble getting along with his general manager and there was supposedly a shouting match between him and Tua. And other things like that, of the inability getting along with players. So I don't know how much of that's true. You start hearing that kind of stuff after somebody's fired. But when I looked at the turnaround they had, they won 8 of the last 9. Mm-hmm. The only team that beat them were the Titans. That's a pretty darn good turnaround. And he had a rookie receiver that set a record and Waddle.
Yep.
Caught over 100 passes. So I thought that was a team going in the right direction. So I didn't think they would fire him unless there were some behind-the-scenes things that might have led to his undoing.
Vince, when we were talking about Sunday on the NFL report, you highlighted that it's not as though they ran the gauntlet when it came to their win streak, although all you can do is beat the team that's in front of you.
Right.
They did that, but you're right. It's not as though this came at the expense of the best of the best.
Yeah, and if your mind is already made up, you need some impressive wins maybe to kind of make some of those people change their mind potentially. It just seems like, for whatever reason, whether it's the Deshaun Watson / Tua deal and what side of the fence you're on that, or if it's the yo-yo of Tua, which happened a lot. People may have already made their determination in there. I do think it's something like that relationship because just wins and losses, he didn't have that much time, and it's not like he was trending down every year, even though there were some playoff expectations for the Dolphins for some this year.
Yeah, you won 10 games, missed it last year, or I should say in 2020. You do finish with a winning record, but again, you missed the playoffs, but you go 19-14, I think, mm-hmm. as the head coach. My guess is that somebody's going to hire him.
Yeah, I think he interviewed with the Bears today, I want to say.
I remembered the record differently. I thought he was basically 24-25 or 25-24. Am I missing something there?
Oh, I might have figured it wrong.
He was there 3 years.
3 years, my bad. Yeah, two. Okay, I was looking at the last 2 years.
He was either one below 500.
Okay, you're right. Yeah. I was only looking at the last 2 years. Yeah, that's my bad.
And real quick, John, my count, 8 VFLs that are on active rosters right now that would be in the playoffs at this point. So now that's fluid because practice squads, because of COVID, have to come up. You know, Kendall Vickers was the Raiders. He was on the COVID list. Is he going to be? So that number is fluid, but it'll be in the 8-ish range in terms of VFLs in the NFL playoffs.
With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. Our guest, Vince Ferrara, as we get Vince's views, his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. And just to get everything in terms of paperwork out of the way, it was 24-25 in 3 seasons for Brian Flores as the head coach with the Dolphins. Started 0-7 his first year, but they went 5-4 over the second half of the season. Then they had the 10-win season, and then they also rebounded from the 1-7 start to win 8 of their final 9. So I think it's pretty obvious they were a second-half ball club.
I think so, in his tenure, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
But let's get a call from Steve, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. All of y'all, talk about this receiver from Wyoming. It's says he wants to come to Tennessee. Everything people say is he had a really great year. And is that how y'all feel about it? I'm glad to have him. I think he's going to be real good. But, you know, everybody says he really was impressive, all things considered, at Wyoming this year.
Yeah, Steve, we talked. Yeah, I'm sorry, Steve. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the hour. You might have missed it. I think it's a great get for Tennessee. A lot of schools wanted him, a lot of big-name schools. Including USC and Texas. So, yes, he was at Wyoming, but in the transfer portal, you can get recruited different than maybe what people perceive your school to be. So you can't just look at Wyoming and say, oh, how good can he be? and he was very productive. I think he had 12 touchdown catches, which I believe were all but 3 of the team's touchdown receptions. So very productive in catches and yards. He's big at 6'3", but can still really run. And because of the measurables and productivity, that's why a lot of schools wanted him. And another thing that we talked about earlier was that Tennessee had a need at that outside receiver position. You're losing Javonte Payton. I know Velus Jones played the slot, but they, out of what they have left at that wide receiver position, I think they have more options inside at that slot and in those run after catch type of guys, including in the signing class, versus the guys in terms of bodies, productivity, and experience with the outside guys. So I think he's a guy that could very well start for Tennessee opposite Cedric Tillman, and it'd be pretty exciting. I think it's a really, really nice get for Tennessee in a lot of ways.
Steve, was interesting. He was a 4-star coming out of the transfer portal. He was a 2-star coming out of high school in Arlington, Texas.
Right.
So he definitely developed. Says he runs a 4.38 in the 40, which is darn good speed.
Yep.
Right. It's extremely good. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, let me ask y'all this, speaking of the receivers, and maybe none of us really know, but do you think that is the name Callaway, that after the Florida game didn't play again, after he dropped that pass, and the kid from Mississippi, what's the name, Holiday, do you think they will be there next season?
I don't know. They were not as productive as I thought they would be. Neither was Jalen Hyatt. Hyatt had a case of the drops.
Right.
One or two of those needs to come through, in my opinion.
Right.
And one of the freshmen probably needs to come through, John, to add some depth there. And they've got some really good-looking freshman receivers coming in.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's the wise choice to label just not sure right now, because I think it could come down to what feel any of those individuals get coming out of spring practice, yeah. whether right. or not they feel right. they're going to have an increased role, or it might be the writing on the wall.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay. Oh, by the way, guys, were y'all happy, or were you not either happy or sad that Georgia beat Alabama last night?
I had picked Alabama to win, and so if that didn't happen, I wasn't displeased. I didn't lose sleep, but it is a different world now that Georgia has a national championship, and there's the devil you know, and that's Alabama winning the title all the time. Right. Who knows what it's going to be like now that Georgia rules the roost.
Right. So it's a shame both of them couldn't lose, Steve.
Yeah, ties in the NFL, not in the college football playoff.
Yeah,
those are not allowed. By the way, Callaway and Holiday combined 6 catches this year.
Yeah, there were many people that that threw out the internet survey or the Twitter survey that it's like, who are you for in tonight's game, Alabama, Georgia, or Meteor? Striking Indianapolis. Final segment for us with Vince Ferrara. His appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. Let's say hello to Eric, who joins us. Hi, Eric, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you guys?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. I have heard a lot about recruiting for the offensive side of the ball and the portal and all that, and that's great. But I'm just wondering, what are we doing to shore up the defense? If they can't score on you, they can't beat you.
Fair point.
So I'm just wondering, what the situation is. What are they doing defensively?
Well, they did bring in 8 in the signing class. Yes, you want to try to get some impact guys in the transfer portal, and I do think, especially in the secondary, that you might see them do that. We'll see what if any guys from Georgia or Alabama hit the portal at some point. Those might be good candidates. I mean, they had one this year, Brandon Turnage, that came from Alabama. So I think there's still time. Guys will hit the portal at different times, so that I wouldn't worry about that part of it, too. There are a few high school players that they're still looking at on the defensive line. There's a couple of guys, Moten from Florida, Jenkins from New Jersey. There's a safety, Mitchell, that they're looking at as well. So there are a few guys that for the February signing period that I think you could see them add. But to me, at some point, maybe not in this class this year, but moving forward, this coaching staff needs to show that they can recruit not just defensive players, but elite defensive players. It's an offensive game right now, and you're not going to get back to the Georgia defenses that we saw from them this year. Those are going to be few and far between in college football. But you still need those elite players to get you the key stops and the key times. You still need them to win. And this coaching staff has to show that they can lure those kind of players into this team with the way they operate.
So Rodney Gardner, I would assume, is going to be very influential in showing up the defense.
Sure. He had a great year on the field, arguably the assistant of the year in terms of, you give him an MVP award for the staff, the way that D-line played, and if you include especially that Leo spot. So, yeah, he's known to be a very good recruiter. I wonder, I'm not exactly sure, I wonder how, if it's an adjustment for him to try to recruit into this system with the way they play offense. Jimmy, have you heard anything about that? Any difficulty or because I think a lot of times he's been a part of teams that were a little bit slower pace to try to recruit to, maybe a little bit different as a D lineman in recruiting with this kind of offense.
I don't know. I just know that at the quarterback club, when he was asked about it, he said, hey, if we're playing 104 snaps on defense, that's just more opportunities for an interception or a sack. Okay. Yeah, good luck selling that. And maybe they didn't get a lot of defensive players. They did get what looks like on paper some really good ones. Joshua Joseph is known as a good pass rusher. James Pierce is a good get. Jordan yep. Phillips has already practiced with the team. Christian Harris's dad was an All-Pro in the NFL. So they did get some names. They got a JUCO DB and Desmond Williams. But they need more. Yep. They need as many as they can get. They need as much depth as they can get. They did get an Alabama and an Auburn transfer. Neither one of them played that much in the secondary this right. year. So they need to shore that up as best they can because that to me is going to be the biggest challenge for Heupel taking this program to the next level.
Right.
Defense is going to be the biggest challenge for him?
Yes, to take this program to the next level. I think you can win next nine level, games yeah. with this offense.
Yeah.
But you better have a better to me, your defense better be able to hold up if you want to take it past nine.
Eric, we sure do appreciate the call. Vince, there's Tennessee basketball tonight. The Volunteers play host to South Carolina. Who can we look forward to hearing you talk to in the pregame?
Santiago Vescovi. We talked about how, you know, what happened in the LSU game and how they've bounced back, and he breaks down South Carolina a little bit. One thing that didn't make the cut was I asked him about what Rick Barnes said about Vescovi and some other players being frustrated in that LSU game. And he said, no, I was sick a couple of days before that. So I was preserving my energy. It was quieter in huddles and just trying to save my energy. He said that maybe just gave the illusion that I was frustrated. So he did not necessarily agree with Rick Barnes in terms of the frustration level. Who knows if that was the case for other guys, but I think he's been their most consistent player, and they need him and a lot of other guys to take that LSU game to heart. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like they took it pretty hard. We'll see what their response is. I'm honestly worried about this team a little bit long term. Yes, it's very early in SEC play, but man, this is a game where they're supposed to win on paper. You better get it done on your home court, and they have won on their home court. Last time out, it was ugly. And they still got it done. I need to see this team play better and show some urgency that I did not see and not look as tight as they do, especially on offense.
Vince, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. And, of course, we appreciate Waters Equipment for not only this hour, but all that they support and sponsor when it comes to our group of stations. But always fun. Have a great rest of the week.
All right, you guys do the same. Appreciate you.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Coming up, hour number three of Sports Talk. And, Jimmy, we have another special guest that will join us to start next hour.
Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director. We look forward to visiting with him.
That's next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.